news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that an internal State Department memo signed by 23 U.S. Embassy staffers on July 13th warned Secretary of State Anthony Blinken of the potential collapse of Kabul soon after the U.S.'s August 31st troop withdrawal deadline in Afghanistan. The classified cable represents the clearest evidence yet that the administration had been warned by its own officials on the ground that the Taliban's advance was imminent and Afghanistan's military may be unable to stop it. Hundreds of people took to the streets in Kabul and other cities in Afghanistan on Thursday to protest the ouster of the country's democratic government by the Taliban. Many in the crowd waved the green and black flag of Afghanistan, chanting, "Our flag, our pride, and God is great," while Taliban forces dispersed some of the peaceful demonstrations with gunfire. They killed at least two protesters and injured at least six others in Assadabad. Taliban fighters took down the Republic's flag and replaced it with their own as they rapidly conquered territory across the country. Many women who fear losing civil rights under the Taliban participated in a protest in Kabul, where at least two dozen were injured. The United States and NATO are struggling to speed up the evacuation effort at the airport in Kabul on Friday as criticism grows over the handling of the crisis. Armed Taliban checkpoints, paperwork problems, and other issues contributed to the ongoing chaos and delays as thousands of people clogged the airport, desperate to flee, and thousands more unsuccessfully trying to get to the airport. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said 2,000 passengers were flown out of the country over each of the past 2 days. State Department spokesman Ned Price said 6,000 more people were cleared for evacuation on Thursday, accelerating their effort to get Americans and Afghans who worked with U.S. troops out of the country. Here at home, with kids going back to school, the COVID-19 Delta variant is finding lots of very young victims. Children are filling intensive care beds in record numbers. Not helping the situation are, at last count, 9 Republican governors who think they know more than the medical experts. Arizona, Arkansas, Iowa, Oklahoma, Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Utah have all enacted laws or issued executive orders prohibiting school districts from requiring students to wear masks. In Florida, the state that's been leading the nation in the latest COVID outbreak, a judge on Thursday rejected Governor Ron DeSantis's move to kill a lawsuit filed by a group of parents that challenged the authority of his administration to stop school districts from enforcing the mask mandates. So the case moves forward. Its first hearing is slated for Monday. The parents claim the DeSantis administration is putting the safety of children at risk by blocking local mask policies. And in Texas, where Governor Greg Abbott just tested positive, the Texas Education Agency confirmed that his rule banning mandates will not be enforced until legal challenges against it are settled. But then the Texas Supreme Court stepped in and declined to block a restraining order against the ban, thereby allowing schools to require students to wear masks. Now, although there has been a mask mandate in the House of Representatives, no such rule is or has been in effect in the Senate. So it came as no surprise that 3 U.S. senators all tested positive for COVID-19 on Thursday. Colorado Senator John Hickenlooper, from Maine, Angus King, and Roger Wicker of Mississippi all released statements about testing positive for COVID-19 within hours of each other, all saying they had mild symptoms, although they're fully vaccinated. Their positive tests highlight the vaccination's purpose to prevent serious illness and death. Here we go again. Capitol Hill was locked down for over 5 hours on Thursday as a man in a black pickup truck parked on the sidewalk of the Library of Congress near the Capitol claiming to have a bomb. The man, ID'd as 49-year-old Floyd Ray Roseberry of North Carolina, streamed himself on Facebook Live for nearly 4 hours, spewing lies about the 2020 election being stolen and threatening to blow up 2.5 blocks around the Capitol before Facebook finally cut the feed and shut down his page. The man surrendered to police after hours of negotiations. And although bomb-making materials were found in his truck, there were no explosive devices. But adding insult to injury, Congressman and Senate candidate from Alabama, Mo Brooks, defended him. He tweeted out a statement that read, quote, "Sadly, violence and threats of violence targeting America's political institutions are far too common. Although this terrorist's motivation is not yet publicly known, and generally speaking, I understand citizenry anger directed at dictatorial socialism and its threat to liberty, freedom, and the very fabric of American society." Huh? He continued, "The way to stop socialism's march is for patriotic Americans to fight back in the 2022 and 2024 elections. I strongly encourage patriotic Americans to do exactly that, more so than ever before. Bluntly stated, America's future is at risk." Shouldn't siding with a domestic terrorist be illegal, especially for a member of Congress? Asking for a friend. So you recall how the Texas House Democrats left the state last month, denying the Republican majority a quorum, thereby preventing them from passing new voting suppression legislation. They held a united front remaining in D.C., lobbying Congress to pass federal legislation to prevent these efforts to wrest control of elections. Well, on Thursday, after 38 days, three of the Democrats returned to Texas and to the state house floor, allowing the legislature to reach a quorum, effectively ending the Democrats' valiant effort to protect the right to vote. The three, Representatives Garnett Coleman, Anna Hernandez, and Armando Wall, said in a joint statement that they were, quote, "proud of the heroic work of the boycott and vowed to continue the fight on the House floor." Huh? Well, they cited the catastrophic surge in COVID-19 cases and the need to manage the crisis as their reason for coming back. But even with those three Democrats voting no, the bill will most likely pass. Obviously, a federal remedy is needed. And to that end, on Tuesday, Congresswoman Terry Sewell of Alabama introduced H.R. 4, the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act of 2021. It expands federal voting protections to all 50 states, providing oversight of any state or local government that has had repeated election violations. It would also stop more subtle voter suppression rules and would stop courts from changing election rules that disenfranchise voters during an election. The House will take up that bill when it returns from a break on Monday, August 23rd. But the fate of the bill will probably be determined in the Senate, where so far only one Republican, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, has signaled support. The bill will die there unless Senate Democrats agree to carve out an exception that would enable them to pass it without the filibuster. They gotta do something. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is completely listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.